having a bad week? Well, hang in there, because we are back with your favorite Avatar The Last Airbender rewatch podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Zach Muhammad, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend, Jacob Redmond. Jacob, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, Zach. That intro was so smooth that you might cause people to slip, break their ankles, and cause mass carnage. That's how smooth it was, Zach.
Wow, you sounded like a Zulu on the podcast.
Nice. You know, I got a lot of really good advice on how to interact with people in a completely normal way. I can't wait to go to my next party. I'm going to implement all of this. I'm going to laugh at people's jokes. I'm going to compliment them in the most weird ways possible. Yeah, this was like a great life advice episode, Zach. I'm excited to talk about it. But, you know, we're going to the beach. It would be boring to go to the beach alone. You know, we had to bring some guests on. Two people that have made this podcast in particular extremely special for us. So I'm very excited to have these people on. First, we're joined by Dan Sinensky, Spite himself. Dan Sinensky, Mr. Spite, joining us here. Dan, how are you doing today?
It's great to be here. Heard we were starting at 12 noon sharp, and we are the perfect party guest because we are punctual and ready to get started.
I have to say, you kind of look like you're being held hostage while you're saying that. You're like, we are the perfect party guest, and I love it.
Well, I was well trained in how to interact in all social situations.
Just like Azula, nice. But we have a second guest today as well. We're joined by the great feedback writer. She's written in so many times, Sarah Noor.
Yeah.
Did Hello. I pronounce your last name right?
Is that you right? Did. Like, okay, actually, yeah. Perfect. Like, and we probably should have discussed that ahead of time, but that's okay, because you nailed it on the first time. And I'm just so excited to be here. I wish I would have come up with like a really funny one line like Dan did, but I'll just go ahead and compliment Zach's like really sharp hoodie. I mean, it's so sharp. You could puncture the hull of a Empire class Fire Nation battleship leaving thousands to drown at sea, you know, because it's so sharp.
And the mustache he's rocking. I mean,
I know. It's like a good, it's
really
a look.
It really is a danger to society.
Oh, shucks. Y'all are too flattering. Y'all are too kind. Oh,
shucks. And I just have to ask, honestly, before we get too far into the podcast, Jacob, are you in a hotel room?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Yep, I am.
I was a little worried that like your aesthetic was like hotel chic in your bedroom. And I was like, this is not how I imagined Jacob's background to be. But now no. I just know you're like living the party life.
Yeah, living the party life. No, usually I'm recording in like a room with like a giant TV behind me. And so like sometimes there's just like an image on the back of the screen, like with a giant piano. I'm sure Zach's seen that many times. But no, this time we have some ugly aesthetic behind me, but you know, it's fine.
Just like the Zoo Crew, you are on vacation and ready to reveal your true self.
That is true. Although, thank goodness I'm not on vacation to the beach. We should probably talk about how you got into Avatar in a second. But I would first like to say, the beach is so overrated. I do not like beach vacations. I'm not a fan of them at all.
Yes.
Perfect.
I'm from Los Angeles. Grew up going to the beach. There's sand everywhere. There's people everywhere. It's so noisy. It's so smelly. There's usually not like a good bathroom. Why choose a beach?
I completely concur with that.
As a New Jersey resident, I'm obligated to say the beach is fine, but the shore is better.
Yeah, Zach, are you a beach person?
Not really. I can't swim, so I don't love the beach too much.
Yeah, well, it's overrated. You're not missing much. Anyway, before we get too far into it, before we start talking about the episode, how do you all get into Avatar? Like, what made you, you know, like the show? Like, be fans of hanging there. Like, yeah, what about Avatar makes you, you know, so excited to be here? Sarah, what's your origin story?
My origin story. So I'm old enough to have watched Avatar as it was airing live on Nickelodeon. And actually old enough to probably maybe like not be like, maybe like a little too old for the show, or at least when it finished. I just think I was like 13 or 14 when it started airing, and I watched it with my sister, and we watched like really religiously. Like, we had to watch Avatar, and it was like right on the cusp of like DVRs becoming popular, so it's like if you missed an episode, you had to wait for them to like do a whole season recap and like air all 20 episodes over 24 hours or something and catch up on an episode that you missed. But I remember the finale episode, the like 4-part finale episode, aired on my sister's birthday, like 2008, and we like had a whole Avatar like watch party for it, and it was really exciting, and I like felt guilt about being too old for the show already. And then eventually I just accepted myself because like, who cares what other people think? Like, I like watching kids cartoons and that's okay.
Yeah. I absolutely love that. Yeah. I really do like the memories of like the finale coming out. That was just like so great. I'm so happy that like other people have that memory as well. What kind of bender are you? Very important question here.
Yeah, it's very important. I've given it a lot of thought for many, many years, and I think that I have to, undoubtedly say I'm an earthbender because I'm very, very, like, at my core, a very stubborn person. I'm much better now, like, going with the flow, but, like, definitely, like, my inner core is, like, to be stubborn, and I try to stay grounded as much as possible also.
Okay, yeah. Good earthbender answers. Yeah, checks out. Makes sense to me. Jen, what's your origin story with Atla Universe?
So my origin story with Avatar is probably as on-brand as possible. I was at a friend's house and we were playing board games, and we had like the TV on in the background, and I was still like watching Nickelodeon at this time. And then Avatar came on. I remember being excited about it, but not really knowing what was going to happen. And then I was immediately hooked and tried to watch every episode as it aired, just because, as we all know, in those days, if you missed it, you missed it. That's it. And that was it. I was hooked. And I read as much like the comics and all the write-ups, everything on Tumblr as I could. I just had to know everything.
Nice. And then all important question, what kind of bender?
I guess if it's possible, I don't know if we're at this place in the Avatar world yet, but I think I'm like a non-angry firebender.
Oh, like, okay.
Yeah. Someone who's just tapped into the drive, but not all the aggression. Just want to go, 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 go. Full frontal attack.
Like Iroh. I feel like we're there. We have Iroh the whole way through.
Yeah.
Or like Jacob's favorite character, Che.
Che.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's lots of, you know, normal firebenders. Yeah. Okay. I think I'm probably like closer to the aggressive firebender, but that's fine. You know, together, Dan, we have the full range of what it means to be a firebender. And yeah, I actually think that that's like this shows in the episode quite well, like the range being a firebender. Like you have, like obviously, you know, Mei and Ty Lee are not benders themselves, but like Mei's like apathy here, like seems very firebender energy. Then you get Azula, who's just like full aggression. You've got Zuko, who's brooding. Like this is a great episode for fleshing out what it means to be a firebender. So I'm excited to get into it. Zach, what are your thoughts on the overall episode? Like this is an episode that is like pretty iconic. You know, the slice of life episode is very abnormal for Avatar. What were your thoughts watching it back, Zach?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this episode. I love the slice of life nature of it. And like, it's so different, like you're saying, compared to some of the other episodes we've seen. And like, especially the scene at the end where everyone's like pouring their hearts out. That was such a powerful scene. And overall, I just like, I really like this episode. It's one of those episodes you never forget on a rewatch. It's like, you just remember it so vividly. So I really enjoy it.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So I was like reading about this episode and the beach was starting out as the B plot. Like this was going to be like, you know, the background to like some other story about Aang. And they were like, no, like let's give this an entire episode. And I think I'm really glad they did because like getting this felt so different. It didn't feel like, you know, your normal Avatar episode, but still like really enjoyable. So I'm excited to get into it here. Yeah, so maybe we can start out recapping it here. We start, they're on a boat, they being Azula, Ty Lee, Mei, and Zuko. They're out on the waters, you know, doing their own thing. They're excited to go to Ember Island, which we've heard about before, but excited to see it here. And they're gonna, you know, go on the beach with nothing to do, just soak up the sun. And Zuko perfectly encapsulates why I don't like the beach. She's like, doing nothing is a waste of time. I completely agree. Yeah, I really appreciated that. Azula then says that, like, you know, we needed to go alone, or we needed to go away so that, like, their dad could meet with the advisors alone, which kind of makes me question, like, is their house not big enough for them to, like, go to a separate wing? Like, why do they have to go on an entire vacation in order to get away? Like, Sarah, is the house...
I think you're forgetting the origin of Zuko getting his scar was bursting in and, like, pushing it in on a former advisor meeting. So, I fully support the Fire Lord sending Zuko away. Being like, yeah, my son has no chill. He's got to go to the beach.
That's actually a very good answer. It's like, yeah, we can't risk it, even though we have, like, a literal palace.
I have a question, though. I'm surprised why doesn't he keep Azula, though? Isn't Azula, like, a big part of his plan? She's, like, sent to capture the Avatar. She just captured Ba Sing Se. Isn't that, like, a very prestigious thing to be doing? I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I think a fundamental thing about Zuko is he's very awkward, and other than, like, his sister, like, he doesn't have any friends. His friends are his uncle, his sister, who hates him, and he hates, and his sister's friends. So, like, he can't just, like, go to the beach by himself and try to, like, mingle. That's not his area. He needs, like, people to keep him company.
That's a very good point, Dan. That's an astute observation.
I like how you didn't even count his girlfriend as a friend.
I mean, he met his girlfriend through his sister, and she had to push them together to begin with. Like, and it's not even like Zuko and Mei are getting along in this episode.
No, we're getting into it. They have no chemistry at all.
And it's very toxic. Like, their relationship, I was like, yikes, I am not about that at all. But no, you're right. It's kind of like the Truman Show. Like, you can't just send Zuko alone, because then he might do things you don't want. So you have to, like, shape his world and, like, send Azula with him, and Azula will, like, babysit him for him. But yeah, that's kind of sad if your best friend is your uncle, your sister who hates you, and your sister's friends. Like, that's rough out here. Anyway, so they talk about going to Ember Island. They're saying, like, they used to have a house there. They used to go there every summer. Real bougie stuff. I guess it makes sense. They're literally royalty. But then they get there. They get to the house. And I was shocked, because what we see is not a house fit for royalty. What we see is, like, a guest house. It was very, very small. I thought this house was, like, yeah, I don't know, not fit for Zuko and Azula. Zach, were you impressed by this house that you saw here?
No, it looked like a little shack on the beach. It looked like shit, part of my language. I don't know what else, how else to describe it. Sorry, I should have cussed, my bad. But yeah, it didn't look great, to be honest. Looked kind of like run down.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, this is the place where you keep, like, the paddles for the canoe. It's not, like, the place where you keep, like, the literal prince and princess of the Fire Nation. I was, like, pretty surprised they didn't have a better house. I mean, like, I shouldn't speak. I don't have a lake house at all, so I would take this lake house over any other lake house. But, I don't know. We see that Lo and Lee are there. They're very happy, great, great hosts, welcoming them to Ember Island. But sadly, it smells like old lady in the house, which I guess makes sense. I don't really know what old lady smells like. Is anyone on the call gonna let me know what old lady smells like?
Kind of just smells like, I used to volunteer at an old folks home, so it kind of smells like musty and also like very heavily floral perfume, as if that would cover like a musty kind of decay smell.
Okay. I now know what old lady smells like when you said
I'm sure that you've said it. I'm sure you smelled it. I mean, it's pretty distinct.
No, when you said the floral perfume, it sent me back to some memory I had where I was like, oh yeah, that's old lady smell. Okay. yeah, makes sense. And then Mei is like, I wonder why. Just like so dry. Mei's energy here is exactly me at the beach. I absolutely love that.
Mei has a lot of good one-liners this episode. Honestly.
Yeah, she really does. So then Ty Lee sees a picture on the wall, and she's like, oh, who are these two beautiful women? It's a little offensive that she couldn't tell, because obviously it's Lo and Lee, stunning women themselves. They even do the pose. They speak at the same time. Like, this is clearly rehearsed, right? Like, they rehearse all their lines beforehand.
I think so. And they have a little thing where they, like, later on in the episode, they, like, clap, clap, snap, snap, and they're like, to the beach. So, like, they have another rehearsed little thing they do later on.
Yeah.
We really should have practiced something, actually, all together, like,
Dang. Yeah, that's too bad. I guess it's not too late. We could, like, while we're podcasting, we could, like, chat on the side so we can all in unison say something. Although, obviously, like, over the, like, recording, it wouldn't even sound in sync, so we couldn't even get it right.
Well, we were talking about how bad the cottage is, right? That's Lo and Lee's cottage. They probably don't get that many guests. So when they're not helping train Azula, they're just practicing their moves and their chants and speaking in unison so they can impress their guests when they do arrive.
That's true. Yeah, but
I think ironically, by doing that, they get less guests because I would hate if I went to someone's house. Like, imagine if, like, I went, if you go to someone's house, you walk in and the first thing they do is in unison, like, do a little song and dance routine. Like, I'm not here to see your dress rehearsal. Like, I'm just here to, you know, enjoy my time. So I think that might be why they aren't getting so many guests.
I was kind of enjoying the vibe. I don't know. Like, I really don't like the beach, but I like a beach house. I think the view where they had dinner later was really nice. I like the seashell bedspread. It's a tongue twister. I think if you walked in, like Airbnb-ing the cottage, you'd be like, oh, it's a cute little cottage. I agree that, like, probably for Azula and Zuko, like, it's a little beneath them. But maybe, like, the whole vibe helped them really break out of their shells and be like, oh, what would it be like to just be an everyday Fire Nation kid not living in a palace? Let's test it out for the weekend.
Yeah. I get why that's, like, appealing, especially to Azula, who's, like, usually so domineering that, like, she's only treated as Azula, because if you didn't, she would, like, break you in half. But yeah, like, I ultimately, like, if these people are opening up an Airbnb, like, they're some of the weirdest hosts you could possibly have. Like, one of my friends was driving from Chicago, like, back to the Northeast. And when she got to the place, she, like, had an Airbnb host who was, like, talking about the ducks, saying, like, oh, we have to feed the ducks in the morning. You have to wake up early and feed the ducks with me. And, like, that really feels like the same energy as Lo and Lee. Like, the whole, like you're coming here. Like, I have this whole thing planned for you, even though you are not, like, a part of it. But
I think we figured out why Ozai sent them away, because Lo and Lee were just begging Ozai, we need guests. Like, no one wants to hang out with us. Please send us some company. It's like, okay, fine. You can have my, like, one son I don't like and the other people who he needs to be his buffers.
You think Lo and Lee have a direct line to Ozai? They got the speed. They got him on speed dial or whatever. Like,
yeah, I was about to ask, what did Lo and Lee do to get on Ozai's good side, where Ozai owes them favors? Like, what? Like, make the canon for me, Dan.
They, like, they're Azula's advisors. They train her. They were teaching her, like, when she was first introduced, like, her firebending. So, like, she's his favorite, and anything they do to make her better, he's got to appreciate a little bit.
Now, yeah, think about these ladies. They're Azula's firebending masters. We know Azula is a firebending prodigy. Like, how wicked good are these women at firebending? We never get to see it, but they must be just fantastic.
I think I'm not actually sure we know if they even firebend. My guess is they might be, like, you know, good coach, but not, like, actual player. Like, Zach, this happens in basketball sometimes, right? Where, like, a good coach, like, has, like, didn't play.
That's a lot of time. There's a common adage in basketball where the best players make for the worst coaches. A lot of the really good coaches are people who, like, haven't played professionally at a high level. So
I could not see Lo and Lee firebending. And if they do, it would only be, like, synchronized firebending. They've been the gold medal at the Olympics. I think that's probably the only event that they'd have a chance if they were. But anyway, I did, like you mentioned this earlier, Sarah, about how the seashell bedspread, which is quite a tongue twister, and May just says, like, it looks like the beach threw up all over it. And that is my indictment of every beach house, is, like, they take the aesthetic to the extreme. They make it so ugly. Like, May was just firing on all cylinders today.
Mountain cabins also. I just stayed at Big Bear, and, like, everything was wood and antlers. And it's like, is there a rule here that it has to be, like, this... Right. Tacky, right. I was living for it, but, like, they literally had, like, a wine rack that was made of antlers, and I was like, where do you even buy this stuff?
Why can't we just have, like, a mid-century modern beach house? Like, that's my aesthetic, that's what I want to go to. Like, I don't need the whole beach vibe, just give me some, like, chic design. That's all I need.
So what's better, a beach house that's themed like the beach, or a hotel room that's themed like nothing with no aesthetic?
I think I would take the no aesthetic because, okay, so when you go to a beach house, it has those annoying signs that are like, let the waves like crash away your emotions and like the sun can soak up your sadness. And it's like, no, like just give me nothing. I would prefer that. Like I don't need this whole like force down your throat type energy. I'm not there for it at all. Anyway, yeah. So then, they're going, Lee and Lo are talking about the beach. They're saying like, oh, you know, this is a magical place. Like open your mind. And this is when they do their like a little dance. They say time to hit the beach. And when they show their bathing suits, Zach, you want to take this one?
I had like a weird feeling Jacob would throw this to me. So yeah, they have some rather revealing outfits. I have it in my, I took comprehensive notes for the episodes. So yeah, they have some, yeah, rather revealing outfits is all I'll say. I don't need to dig more
descriptive. My notes are more descriptive than that. And I was going to say it, but now that I'm here on the part of the podcast, I think I might just go ahead and skip it.
Continue.
I'll leave it at May feels like she has to cover Zuko's eyes because it's that tempting. That's what I'll say. Anyone else want to add to that or are we moving right along?
I don't know. I mean, we see a lot of Zuko being like a controlling boyfriend later on in the episode. But here, May is being super possessive. Zuko, you can't look at these other women. I need to like prevent you from being tempted.
I mean, maybe she was trying to protect him because the sight was so shocking. I want to guess like what Jacob wrote in his notes. Like now it's like a mystery. Like what did you put like, oh, I threw up a little in my mouth. Like what's on there?
It was just very descriptive of what we thought.
I don't think we need to get into
this podcast. isn't rated for that. We can't. Exactly. Sorry. Yeah,
this is a PG only.
Exactly. Yeah, but I think I'm Team Sarah. I think May was protecting Zuko from the sight.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, she was able to muster a little care. This was the one thing that broke her out of her blah. Like, nope, I need to protect my man from this sight.
Yep. Anyway, so they do this whole thing. Then we go to like Team Avatar. Toph is the one who is like being the responsible one, which I thought was impressive. So we see Aang, he's swimming along, doing his thing. And Toph's like, hey, like, you know, I like that you're swimming and all, but like, shouldn't you cover yourself up? Which I kind of wanted to tell Lo and Lee. But then she's the one who's being responsible. I'm really surprised it wasn't Sokka who's like, hey, like your arrows are showing a bit. Like, can we please, cover up a little bit? But yeah, I don't know. Toph is the one here who says like, you know, people might see your tattoos. That's not great. Katara is the one who's saying like, no, it's actually safe. There's walls around us. And again, I was really surprised. Like this did not seem to fit their characters. I thought it would have been like maybe opposite. Toph being the one who's like, you know, who cares? No one can see, especially her. And so I thought that that's maybe what we were going to get. But yeah, I don't know. Was this surprising to anyone else that Toph was the one who cared?
Yeah, it was a little surprising.
I think they just had to do it so they could play like Aang saying, no, I'm wearing trunks. So they could be like, oh, Toph is blind. So she doesn't know that Aang is wearing clothes. So we can make another little blind reference real quick.
Interesting. I didn't even think about like the role reversal where you would think that Katara would be more nervous. That's like her nature. But also like, how have we gotten this far to season 3 that only they care in the Fire Nation that they need to cover the tattoos? Like it's just been this running thing throughout every episode. Aang is just like out there as the Avatar and there's obviously Fire Nation spies everywhere and they get captured all the time. It's like, this is why you don't have children leaving, because obviously like cover up your tattoos, dude.
Yeah. That is fair. It doesn't make a ton of sense. It's going to come to bite them in the ass in like a few minutes. Toph was correct. He should have been covering up a little bit.
Immediately after Katara says there are walls around them, they don't need to worry, Aang shoots right through the water slide outside the walls. Those walls only help you if you're on the inside of them.
that is true. Yeah, because he immediately is like, oh, water slide, great. He goes down a water slide. Now, water slide, that's a vacation I can get behind. But anyway, he goes down the water slide. He has a ton of fun. And we immediately see these like two Fire Nation soldiers who are just like, you know, bored out of their mind. They're clearly being paid minimum wage. Like they're very, like they're very much like, you know, 16-year-olds, like getting their first job type energy. And they're like, you know, complaining about how boring things are. Then Aang like rolls down. They see him like start to airbend his way back up. And they're like, oh, that's the Avatar. Like that's wild. They need to send a message. But yeah, you're right, Dan. Like, you know, the walls don't protect you when you go outside of them, especially when you're airbending your way up afterwards. Pretty bad look from Aang here.
I mean, yeah, we heard Aang. Sorry.
No, keep
talking over you guys. We heard Aang and Ba Sing say he's really against walls. Like, like his least favorite thing. He hates them like more than he hates anything else in the world. Walls.
Yeah. I guess he saw he was in a wall. He's like, let me get out of here. Zach, what were you going to say?
Oh, I forget. Don't worry about it.
My bad, Zach.
No, it's all good.
I feel like it's so risky for Aang to go down this waterside. He has no idea where it goes, what death waits at the end. Like, yeah, he's Avatar, so theoretically he could fight through anything, but it just seems like no one's concerned, just disappeared. Literally in the heart of the Fire Nation. Like it could have ended in a Fire Nation prison for all he knew.
Yeah, exactly. Like he could have gone right to Boiling Rock. He could have landed like in the prison and been like, oh, perfect. You're right where we wanted you. but instead we see these like, you know, teen Fire Nation soldiers. They're very excited. They're like, you know, I like how they went from like totally deadpan to one of them being like, oh, this is so exciting, as he's like enthusiastically like wrapping up the bird. He's like sending the message like this has to be the highlight of their life. So I'm really excited for them. Well, I guess except the fact that the message doesn't get there, so no one will know and probably no one will believe them. But
that's okay because they got the enjoyment at that time. It doesn't really matter like what the after, like they're already excited.
Wow, you're so enlightened. You're talking about like they're intrinsically happy, so it doesn't matter. Like you're blowing my mind here. I absolutely love it.
Yep. My first thought was, okay, so the message gets destroyed later, and they're going to go back to base, and like the old experience guards, they're going to tell the old experience guards, we saw the Avatar. You're never going to believe it. It's so cool. And they're like, yeah, sure, kid. Of course you saw the Avatar. Great story.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to be like, okay, why are you like on the Brambleberry again on the watch? Like, you gotta stay focused on the job. You know, you've been riding the green line too much. You gotta pay attention now.
I forgot all about the Brambleberry Kush. That's a throwback reference. Oh, that's a classic.
Zach, that was a joke for you.
Oh, thank you. That cracked me up. I was trying to like not laugh directly into my microphone, but that was too funny.
Anyway, so we'll end up seeing this bird again. This Fire Nation bird looks pretty cool. You know, I've always wanted to have a messenger hawk myself. Like, obviously, it's not very efficient, but it's a cool form of communication.
Did they introduce Sokka's messenger hawk just to have the payoff of this messenger hawk?
They haven't introduced Sokka's messenger hawk. They introduced it in season 3, episode 7.
Whoa.
Yeah, Zach run away.
Receipts. Zach's like, oh, it's actually in season 3, episode 7.
Zach, watch ahead.
Yeah, it's the episode with Toph and her scams and stuff.
That's definitely a fun one. That is right. They probably do show the hawk here to set it up in a few episodes, though.
Yeah, true.
What do you think a black ribbon, before we move off? This would have been my feedback question. What is a black ribbon message for? Like, what are the levels of ribbons? What other colors are there? They clearly don't have something specific for we found the Avatar.
No. They don't have one specifically for that one. I think it's like karate belt. So like white belt is like ignore completely. And then like white belt, yellow stripe is like, I don't know, if you have time, you can read it. Yellow belt is like, maybe. And then like it progressively goes up. Black, a black ribbon is like you like immediately, like you take the bird, you read the message, like very important. You have someone perform it in song and dance in unison to get the message across. That's the black ribbon. So there you go. We go back to Ember Island, and we see them going on the beach. You know, Azula's ready for the beach. Ty Lee's ready. Zuko's ready. They're all carrying their stuff. I like seeing them, you know, coming prepared. They've got the blanket, the bag, the umbrella. I didn't see any drinks that they had, no cold liquid, so they probably might get dehydrated. But Azula has no etiquette. She immediately walks up to kids building a sandcastle, steps on it, and then, like, goes out of her way to kick it again. So, like, I get that she's, like, inconsiderate, but this is, like, actively cruel. Inconsiderate is acceptable, but cruel is, like, too far.
It's pretty hilarious because we have, like, when the scene starts, we have, like, this upbeat beach music. It almost sounds like music you'd hear in a video game. Like, it just sounds, like, nice and upbeat until Azula stomps on the kid's castle. Then we get, like, the Azula sound effect, like, duh. Mm-hmm. It's too funny. Yeah, I like this opening scene.
I think with the sandcastle, Azula is used to, like, living in the finest luxury. And here she is at Ember Island having to stay in this little shack. Like, the littlest hint of anything, like, fancy that's not hers, she's upset. And if she can't have it, no one can.
That's fair.
I love Azula. Azula's entire being in this episode, but especially at the beach, like, everything that she does in these beach scenes cracks me up. Like, just every moment that she's on the screen is a good one.
Yeah, and I really think that, like, the people in this episode, like, the music department, the animation department, had a lot of fun because, like, the music cues here are really funny. Like, they go from, like, peaceful to, like, kind of, like, I guess antagonistic. When they're playing volleyball in a bit, like, we get the full, like, battle soundtrack. We get funny faces all throughout. Like, they really had a lot of fun with this episode, and I'm glad they, like, fleshed it out and they went a little sillier with it. Yeah, this is, like, the first example of something where they just, like they sent it, they're like, all right, we're gonna do this. We're gonna have Azula, like, flip your expectations a bit. Then we see these boys are I don't know what the right word is. Obsessed, maybe, with Ty Lee. They want to help her unpack her things. So he hands a bag. She hands a bag to him. And then the weight is so strong in the bag that he, like, falls over. Is Ty Lee, like, a secret bodybuilder?
I don't know.
She has that excellent.
She's stronger than she looks.
Definitely.
What were you going to say, Dan?
She has that core strength from all the training in the circus. It's all about the core supporting all that weight.
Yeah, she's a gymnast. She could do anything.
That's true.
You guys are spitting facts. She's super athletic. I mean, we've seen her do, like, crazy flips in midair and stuff. So, yeah, her carrying this bag is not too impressive in comparison.
That's fair. I was just going to say, like, you're adding words in the chat. I said I didn't know the word for it, and you guys are helping me out with infatuated and thirsty. that's right. I wouldn't break out the H word, but that one would apply as well. That's what were you saying, Dan?
I mean, these Ty Lee's, her little fanboy followers, the first guy, like, his, like, he tries to hold a bag, but, like, that's not what he's suited for. Later, she gets, like, the muscly guy. He would have been better off holding the bag. But, like, they're not playing to their strengths yet.
That's a very good point, because then the muscly guy should be the one providing the shade because he has more mass. So, yeah, that's true, Dan. Good stuff. Yeah, you're right.
They're not working together.
If this was Azula would have said, like, no, this is not your best use. Your best use is doing this. And, like, she would have, like, whipped them all in line, like, gotten them to do their exact best thing. Ty Lee's too casual with it. But, you know, she does get a lot of use out of this. One of the boys, she gets to, you know, block the sun and block out the shade. She gets a lot out of this. Then we see Zuko and Mei. Zuko is here, you know, sitting on the beach under the umbrella. And he sees a shell that he picks up. This is a very impressive shell. You know, I would say a top 10 animated shell. Maybe that's too strong. But, like, it's a very good shell. He gives it to Mei. And Mei's like, why do I want that? And just, like, absolutely drags him for doing this. Zuko's like, oh, don't girls like stuff like this? And Mei says, maybe stupid girls. Which is like... okay, all right, pop off. I thought this was like totally uncalled for.
No way. She's right. First of all, shells are dumb. That's the correct take. Who needs this gross shell from the beach? Second of all, Zuko doesn't know her well enough. Like, he should know his girlfriend isn't into this thing. Like, when you're buying a present for your girl, you have to think about what she wants. And he's saying, don't girls like things like this? And she's saying, no. And then he's mad about it.
Okay, well, what would you get May as a present then? Because I kind of think you're out of luck if you're buying a present for May.
I feel like for May, she kind of needs like a nice book that she could read by the beach.
Okay, yeah. Although, like, probably any book, she's going to be like, that book's boring, and then like not want to read it. Like, I really think that you're kind of just at a loss. Maybe her love language isn't gifts.
Doesn't seem to work here.
Yeah. What do you think May's love language would be? Not physical touch, not a chance in the world.
I have no idea. She doesn't seem to like anything.
Maybe words of affirmation?
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. It might be.
I think with May, like everything we see her saying in the beginning of the episode is just like putting other people down. I don't know if it's words of affirmation for her, but it's more like just like making fun of other people with her. And like, oh, I hate everything but you too. Like, that's her love language. Hate towards everything else.
That's my love language as well. I love a good, like, roasting session. I think it's like, so for me, it's like quality time and then like words of disaffirmation towards other people. I think that's like my one and two.
Yeah. May is not a firebender. She's a roast bender.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah. I like it. Roast bending. Yeah.
How do you think May would do at a roast?
I think she would do well. Although, like, at roast, like, you're supposed to, like, play it up a little bit. You're supposed to, like, you know,
make it dry.
Yeah, like, I think, like, she's, like, very dry. I do think that she would kill with some one-liners. I think, like, she would be, like, a good, like, comedian that goes in. She, like, rattles off a bunch of funny one-liners. So I think that might be where she shines.
Yeah, I think she would be, like, a Jeff Ross roast master type. I think she'd that's in her bag.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that she would be probably the best at roasting out of the rest of them. Like, Azula would really, like, push your buttons in a way that, like, makes you upset. But she doesn't have the, like, soft touch required to roast someone. It would just be, like, too brutal. And they would just, like, be like, okay, uncalled for. That's my...
And Zuko, we obviously know, isn't a funny person, just in general.
Yeah. No. He's not a humor guy, no.
Yeah, it's like Zuko rarely brings... I realize they lean on Azula for the comedic relief more than Zuko, which is weird, especially even in this episode.
Yeah.
Shows how multifaceted she is. She's bringing the humor and the destruction.
True.
That's true.
I feel like to have like a good roast, it's about like pinpointing all of the roastee's imperfections, and that's Azula's strength, but she doesn't have like the social graces to deliver it. I think we need Azula to write the joke and Ty Lee to say it.
Okay. I agree, because Ty Lee would say it in an affable way. You would think the whole time she's like complimenting you, and then there's like that twist at the end. Yeah. All right. I agree. So we'll have Azula ghostwrite. Ghostwrite for Ty Lee. That works for me. That can be the second act after we see Lo and Lee synchronized firebending. We're putting together an entire Ember Island show before the play that they do.
Yeah, so we'll move on here. Zuko tosses the shell to some meathead who sees Ty Lee, instantly has like the goo-goo eyes, then gives it to her. And then Ty Lee, of course, is like, wow, so pretty, which is pretty funny because May was just like, only stupid girls would like this.
Yep. And then like this guy, he tries to be smooth here. He's like, not as pretty as you are. I was like, all right, dude, like, that's your line. That's what you're going with. Like, come on now.
They're 16-year-olds. They don't know better.
I mean, look, I'm not saying I have game, but I at least wouldn't say a line that bad.
Jacob is saying he has game for everyone listening.
Yeah, I'm like nodding like, yes, I do. As I'm saying in the private chat, I'm like just spamming like, I have game. I have game. What? Sometimes I say things, I'm like, what am I doing here? Anyway, so she causes a bit of a rift between these two teens. One of them's like, the shell's not so great. He gets out of the way a little bit. And Ty Lee is like, nope, I need my shade. Go back. I appreciated that. She really has like a whole crew by the end of this episode that's obsessed with her. Zuko then comes back offering another gift, this time an ice cream cone. And I don't really understand how this happens, but as he gives it to her, it falls on May's lap. Then like Zuko doesn't even really go to like clean it up. He just kind of like lets it sit there. She also doesn't really go to clean it up. Is May just okay having ice cream on her lap? Like, that is shot in the head. I do not understand that whatsoever.
I think she's just like so depressed that like Zuko just dropped ice cream all over her that she just like done with like life pretty much, you know what I mean?
May just can't be bothered. Like for good or for bad.
Yeah. She's very stoic. Her response here is pretty funny where she's like, oh, that is really refreshing. And I was like, oh my God. But she doesn't even like, yeah, she doesn't flinch at all. Like if you poured ice cream on me, like I'm getting out of the way or trying to at least.
Yeah. I was never a Zuko Katara shipper, but after seeing the chemistry that May and Zuko have this episode, like maybe that is the correct ship. Who the hell knows?
Wow, you're saying that Zuko and May so bad that Zuko and Katara is the only option.
I'm just saying it might make more sense like that.
Okay. To be clear, Zuko should be with that Earth girl.
Oh, that true. That he went on. Her name Jin? I forget her
Jin,
name.
Yeah.
Jin,
yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, we're only halfway through the episode. Like things are going to turn up a little bit more in Zuko and May's favor. I don't know if I like this whole domino effect of like, we're splitting up May and Zuko. And now Zuko has to be with Katara. And then where does Aang go? This has like a huge ripple effect throughout the whole series.
No, exactly. Exactly. Maybe I was a little too forthcoming with what I was saying. I don't know if I would split them up, but I'm just saying Zuko and May's chemistry this episode, not great. Not great.
Yeah. Dan, you're about to say they're about to get better. Like, yeah, they have like a little up at the end, but we're about like we're going down fast. Like we're on the free fall of their relationship. They're not about to get better yet. Like they're about to have a whole fight in public. Like it's about to get a lot worse for them. But I agree. Like, you know, Zuko, option off the board. Like none of the above, I think.
I have to ask, what was your reaction when Zuko threw off his robe and you got like that great music cue? The classic Avatar Fire Nation theme, and then all those girls, like
my reaction. Eyes. My reaction was like, damn, if I took off my shirt at the beach, I'd get the complete opposite reaction. That's what I was thinking. People would be groaning, you'd hear people like booing. That's what would happen if I took off my shirt at the beach.
People boo? They go out of their way to boo?
Yeah, I think so. I think the reaction would be so negative. I don't got the Zuko like 8-pack or whatever the hell.
I don't think anyone's booing you unless you have like a really negative tattoo or something.
It would be hilarious if you went to a beach and people like, boo, put your shirt back on.
Oh, yeah, I'm not yoked like Dan. I'm not.
Yeah, that's fair. Dan, you know, do you get the same sort of fan service when you go to the beach? Do people just like, you know, stand in the shade for you? Do they like, you know, find you pretty shells?
Do birds fly everywhere when you take off your shirt?
I do get that little like sound cue, that like dramatic music that Zuko got, but it's only in my head. Like no one else is hearing it. It's just like, yeah, I look like Zuko right now. And this is awesome. No one else thinks that, but that's what I'm thinking.
I mean, hey, look, we're talking about intrinsic motivation here on the podcast. That's the name of the game. So, you know, we like it. That's all you need. But yeah, yes. a lot of fan service in this episode where like Zuko like takes his shirt off or like, you know, Ty Lee does something and everyone's like, just completely enamored with
them. I read on the Avatar Wiki that the original design for the bathing suits were too sexy for Nickelodeon. They have to cover them up more.
I'm sorry. They were going to be more than this?
Yeah.
Because when I saw these, I was kind of like, they went like fully, they just like were like.
Kylie's like, hers are, they're out there. But apparently it was even sexier.
The animators were having a field day, right? They're like, okay, we're putting all the Fire Nation teens in their bathing suits for their A plot. And then for the B plot, what if we had Aang and friends also in their bathing suits? Let's just like, we need to sell more toys. We need to sell more merch. Like we need a bathing suit action figure for all of these characters.
Yeah, I really like Avatar. I'm going to go ahead and say if they had the Funko of someone in bathing suit, I think I might skip that one.
You wouldn't buy the Ty Lee bathing suit Funko Pop? Ty Lee bathing suit Funko Pop.
I'm not sure I could. I think like what that says about me, might be not what I'm going for.
Yeah, I think they were targeting a very distinct subset of the audience with like deciding, all right, everyone half naked, all the teens, all the old ladies, everybody, no clothes. That's the theme of this episode.
Yeah, I agree with that. But we're about to get some like real strategy here. So Azula's like, great, we're going to play some volleyball. And Azula like immediately breaks down everything. You know, we're getting a lot of like, you know, people scantily clad. But this is what I'm here for, is Azula as the coach. You know, she sees that this girl in, quote, silly pigtails has a slight hesitation on her left foot. She even like chalks it up to a childhood injury that weakened her. Like, this scouting report is incredible. Like, I don't know where she gets these scouting reports, but like, she should work for a professional basketball team. Like, this is something else.
Yeah, Azula's like ultra competitive nature is showing out here. She's able to analyze the other team and point out their weaknesses instantly. Like, damn, geez, what a great coach. Holy.
Yeah.
But she doesn't even take her own plan. Like, she says, all right, serve it to her left. And then she serves it straight down the middle, which means it's to the pigtail girl's right. Like, Azula has the plan, but she doesn't have the follow through here.
I think that's actually very indicative of like the rest of the show. Like, Azula has the plan, but she doesn't have the follow through.
Yeah. Also, she's hitting this volleyball like 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So I don't actually think it matters where you hit it. Like, she's flying up like 20 feet in the sky and then like rocketing it down at like an immense speed. Like, literally, you could hit it at someone and they could do nothing. So yeah, you are right. You know, she doesn't take full advantage of the scouting report, but it doesn't really matter. And I love this volleyball scene because as soon as we start getting the volleyball, we have like the whole look of like a full battle. We get like the music cues, we get the sound cues, we get like the fast cuts. This really did feel like one of the like early battles, but obviously like through volleyball. The one thing that made me upset, I don't really know volleyball rules that well, but I'm pretty sure you're not allowed to touch the net. And at one point, Ty Lee like leaps, picks the ball and lands on the net. Like, that's a point for the other team. Like, you're not allowed to do that.
I honestly wonder if it is volleyball because they use their feet. It seemed like they were using their feet, right, more than their hands. And it was a circle rather than a square court. And I was just very confused.
I feel like I've seen this sport before.
They only use their feet.
It's not called volleyball. It's called something else. I've seen it played in like Thailand, I want to say, or something, where it's like volleyball with your feet. It's actually super cool because you have to be hella athletic to play with your feet in volleyball in real
life. Wait, yeah, I think I went to this game in Israel. Hold on.
Yeah, it's like a different sport, I think, but I know what you mean. It's not.
I took this
volleyball.
I took this as an example of like another time when there's like a game from our world that's slightly different in their world. I guess that's because I never heard of this like other foot volleyball game that you guys have seen, but it's like how they have like the elemental rock, paper, scissors. I thought this was like special Fire Nation rules volleyball. But it's just like slightly to the left of ours.
Okay, let's see in here. Sepak Takraw, also known as kick volleyball, is a team sport played with a synthetic plastic ball between two teams on a badminton court. Would you look at
that? Okay, but importantly, one of the rules is that you're not allowed to touch the net.
Oh, yes. There you go. So Tylee cheated.
So, again, Tylee cheated. You know, stay woke. Don't give her these points.
Yeah, silly pigtails girl deserved the win.
I know. Like, we got people cheating. Literally, you know, breaking the rules to win. But who's going to correct
them
when
they hit
the ball as hard as they are? So.
Yeah. Are you going to tell Azula, actually, your team cheated. I think we should get the point there. Like, what's it? Yeah, Azula's just spiking that ball right in your face if you say that.
Correct. She already set the net on fire. I mean,
true. Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that. She jumps off Zuko's back and then she like kicks it straight down and lands the final shot, which like sets itself on fire and creates a huge crater and also sets the net on fire. I have a question. Did she fire bend or did she just kick it with such force that it was able to set on fire?
The second one.
Yeah, like, definitely.
There's no fire bending. She's kicking the ball so quickly that it catches on fire.
Like, that must be like 500 kilometers per hour. Sorry to interrupt, Jacob, but damn, that's crazy.
I don't know what that is in miles per hour, but it sounds really fast.
This is an episode of very powerful kicks, as we'll see later. They're like Fire Nation royalty kids. They have like very powerful legs. It's scary. They do not skip leg day.
No, they do not skip leg day. At first, when you said kicks, I was like thinking like, are they wearing shoes that look good? And then I remembered what you meant, but I just, yeah. Anyway, no, they're so
kind of dweeby.
What?
They might be kind of dweeby, but even they don't wear shoes on the beach.
That's true. Although, like, you could wear a good croc on the beach.
Do we see, like, special Fire Nation royalty fancy crocs?
I would love a pair of Fire Nation crocs. They should make that happen. That would
I bet that they sell little Avatar Blaster. Like, you remember those little inserts for the Crocs?
The gibbets.
I bet that they sell those.
All right. Zach, do you want to keep going here? So I
sure,
can
yeah. Then we see Azula go full psycho. She says, and I quote, "We defeated you for all time. You will never rise from the ashes of your humiliation." Well, that was fun.
I love that line.
Yeah. Like, after that, do you even tell them good game? Or like, do you just like, walk away as quickly as possible? Like, put your head down, like, try to get away. Like, yeah, I'm not even sure I congratulate them. But yeah, very, very intense here. Okay. It does look like they have some gibbets, from Avatar. So
they're called gibbets.
Yeah. I love gibbets. My crocs look so good too.
Did they make up that word?
Oh, definitely. That's a totally fake word. Gibbet? Yeah, that's a fake word.
Is that trademarked by Croc Gibbet?
All right. Let's look it up.
I don't know.
This is an educational podcast. Not on how it was spelled. Okay, gibbets. This word would be impossible.
Oh, it is trademarked, folks.
Oh, wow.
Watch out. We might get in trouble for even mentioning it. Before we get sued by Crocs, let's quickly get away. We should get sponsored by Crocs, actually, Zach.
I'd be why not?
Perfect. All right. Great. New life goal. Anyway, okay, so we see Azula like make fun of them. Their playing is so impressive that they get an invite to a party. It's like a who's who party, apparently. Where Ty Lee obviously gets the invite. It seems like May also gets the invite. And Azula's like, why are we not getting the invite? You know, she at first is like, oh, do you not know who we are? Trying to like, you know, play up, like, obviously we're going to get the invite. And this guy just does not care. He's like, no, like we're the cool kids here. Is it absurd that they don't recognize Zuko? Like,
yeah,
he has a very distinguishing facial feature.
Are acne kais very common and we just don't understand it? Like, how do people not notice, like, this is the Fire Lord's son who was banished and then returned fairly recently?
Maybe these two douche nozzles are just so dumb that they can't figure it out. Because I did not like them. Because they're like, don't you know who we are? We're Chan and Ron Jin, dude. Like, I don't know.
I love that.
F these guys.
Like, they're just Zach, I like your vocal fry. I love your vocal fry when you're like, yeah, love it.
Perfect for those characters. I kind of wonder though, the Fire Nation's like very toxic. Do you think like after Ozai burned his son,
there's
like a like spree of people just like, this is dark. This is for like the R Netflix version. You're like, wow, I want to be just like my Fire Lord. He's the coolest. I just want to burn people's faces. There's just like a common injury in the Fire Nation. Like, even just like, we see a Combustion Man later and he has like those metal arm and legs from like his thing, like being blown up. Like, fire's dangerous. Like, even if people aren't intentionally burning each other's faces, like, people get burns. It happens.
Yeah, it's true.
I like that you're suggesting that we saw like copycats that were like, oh, I gotta keep up with the Joneses. The new cool thing is burning my son's face. Like, I get that the CPS horrific. System. Yeah, the CPS system in the Fire Nation is probably not very robust, but I hope that it is better than like letting people burn each other's faces. But
I don't know. We saw that like baby wander off and get kidnapped. I don't think parents are very good in the Fire Nation.
Wow. The HBO version got dark. We're not there yet. I'll wait. There's something later that's like very HBO version that I will remember to say.
Okay.
Do you think it's more a case of maybe there are good child protective services in the Fire Nation, but if Ozai does it, they're not coming in telling the Fire Lord, hey, you actually like committed a crime by like burning your son. We have to send you to prison. Sorry, Fire Lord.
Okay.
It's like, he's above the law.
Yeah, it's like the Church of England. It's like, oh, like you're going to tell me I can't do this. I'll just create my own church because I'm king. And then like I have all of the rules. Like, all right. Yeah, I see it. Okay, so apparently burning is, there's like a little caveat in the laws that if you burn someone's face, it's okay.
Well, just
to not get them in trouble.
I hope that's not the case. We'll just move on from the burning people's faces here. So we cut back to Ember, like their beach house, and Zuko asks Azula why she didn't tell them who they were, and she explains that she's curious to see how people treat them when they don't know their identity.
Mm-hmm. Like that does seem appealing. You know, I'm obviously like, yeah, like if I was a celebrity, it'd be kind of cool to like, you know, not be a celebrity. Like I feel like this always comes up in like movies and TV shows, and people are talking about it, how it's like fun to like get away and be treated as like a normal person. Like, yeah, like it makes sense why that's appealing. Then we get like some weird stuff, from Lo and Lee here. Like, I don't understand what they were talking about, but they're talking, like, Azula's talking about, like, oh, like, it's cool to people not know us who, like, know us as who we are. And Lo and Lee say, like, waves washing away the footprints on the sand, Ember Island gives everyone a clean slate. Ember Island reveals the true you, and then they do this whole, like, clap, snap, dance, whatever.
Yeah, I like the clap, clap.
Oh, Zach, we should have done it in unison.
Oh, true. But I'm too uncoordinated. I would have messed it up.
Anyway, it just felt weird. First off, that they're even there, but then that they had all this.
The metaphor made sense. I don't know.
Okay.
Right. Like, the Ember Island's like this magical place where it just washes away everything, just gives you a clean slate. I kind of get it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm glad it clicked for you. I was just like, that's weird. I don't get why they're here. Okay, then we see something that's... What, then?
No, you just don't get the beach. This is why you don't get the magic of the beach and why it's so great. It has this effect on people. They're like, I'm with Zach on this. Yeah, there's something to this metaphor and the magical healing effects.
I'm not there for it at all. the beach can miss me. In fact, I've told people before that I'm only going to the beach 5 more times in my life. So if someone wants to take me to the beach, they're decrementing one of the 5 times that I will ever go again.
Wow. You should just knock those out really quick and then you never have to go back.
That's a good idea. Okay. I guess I'm going to the beach. Dan, I'll tell you if it's magical, but I'm going to the beach next week.
I used to run a program in that like our group stayed in Tel Aviv in Israel, and my fun fact was always that I hate the beach. And like the 50 kids on my program were just in shock that I would say something so like so heinous. And it's just like, yeah, it just doesn't do it for me. I don't know. Not how magical could you, at all.
How could you say something so controversial yet so brave?
Yeah. I feel like both of you are just like taking the magic out of the beach, saying, kids, you're wrong to like the beach. I'm going to get these 5 times out of the way as quickly as possible, like super regimented to make sure there is no magic.
Yes, that is precisely what my plan is.
That was a good summary.
You hit the nail right on the head. Anyway, the next thing that we get is like kind of cool, also kind of wild. We see this like messenger hawk with a special black ribbon that requires a song and dance flying along. It's living its own life, and then we see this like scary looking thing that's apparently called a raven hawk, and it like dives down. It like takes over the messenger hawk. It like flings it to the ground. It takes the black ribbon. Like this raven hawk completely demolishes the other hawk. I I was scared.
Most impressive about this was like the Raven Hawk like ties up the Messenger Hawk with the Black Ribbon.
Oh, yeah. 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 Like without opposable thumbs. That's crazy.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive.
The Raven Hawk makes the Messenger Hawk a very important message that must be read immediately by wrapping it in the ribbon. No one's going to find it. The Messenger Hawk can't deliver itself anymore because it's wrapped in the ribbon. It became so important and then so inaccessible all in one move.
That's true. Someone's going to like see the Black Ribbon Messenger Hawk and they're going to like open it up. They're going to be like, this isn't a message. Yeah, I like that. I'm sure that the kids on the Brambleberry Kush might think that.
Well, hopefully no kids are smoking, but...
Wait, okay. Sorry, this is not related to Avatar. Did you know that narwhals are a real animal?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So everyone knew that, okay? I thought that they were fake. Like, you know, like unicorns are like obviously fake, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
We all confirm. Yeah. Okay, great. So unicorns fake. So narwhals like look as fake as unicorns. Like we see lion turtles, we see like duck turtles like in Avatar. Narwhals are crazier than any portmanteau animal we've seen in Avatar. Like platypus. Platypus bear, like more reasonable than a narwhal. Like they look so absurd. Someone told me that they were real and it blew my actual mind.
I thought that's something everyone learns when they're a kid because narwhals are always in like children's media, I feel like. So then you just learn that they're a real animal.
So were unicorns and I knew that those weren't real. So
like, my friend actually had a shirt that said narwhals. That's a sick photo. My friend had a shirt that says narwhals. So cool that people think I'm mythical.
I should get that shirt.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I've heard them described as the unicorn of the sea. So like, I get why like you don't believe them in them because they're so closely associated, but nope, they exist.
Okay. Well,
do you think they should be like dolphin unicorns in the Avatar universe and no one would even blink an eye?
That'd be so cool.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, anyway, we're not even to the point yet. I had this in my notes later in the episode, but then I remembered it just now because the door knocker on their house is a lion turtle, which we'll get to in a second. Literally, actually, in 1 second. So I guess I'm just reading ahead of my notes a bit. But the fact that they're real, like, absolutely blew my mind. Anyway, so more, sorry, to get back. Sorry for the tangent. The Ravenhawk goes to the Ravenhawk goes to the assassin that we don't know who he is quite yet. But we see him get the letter. It's really inconvenient for this guy because as soon as he reads something, it looks like it burns a hole in it, which really must make books like very high stakes. Like as you're reading the page, you're like searing a hole through the page. Like you have to be a really quick reader to get any information at all.
He needs like to read things that are like every, like if someone wants him to read something, they have to write it on like a metal slab or something.
Yes.
Like they have to make something burn proof just for him, like special burn proof books.
Does he have to focus so hard when he's reading that he burns it? I don't think so. I think he could just read something. How would he be able to find the Avatar if he can't read without burning everything?
He has a good memory. Like that's the only way. Or like it's written on metal or something like that. I don't know. It looks like as soon as he reads it, he burns it. No.
So we're kidding, right? Like, because I thought like. He was like choosing to burn it by fire, right?
He is. We're just going down what a Jacob's tag is. Don't worry about it.
Okay, just double checking.
Dan's like, do we need to check on him? And Zach's like, no, it's fine. He does this every week. Like, this is normal.
You didn't think narwhals were real. I don't know.
I'm still not entirely convinced, if we're being honest. Like, I've had enough people tell me that they're real to where at this point, like, I guess I'll believe the experts, but like, they look really fake.
They look photoshopped. It's true.
They do look
photoshopped. Maybe if you spent more time at the beach, you'd see some narwhals.
Oh, yeah, because I go to the Arctic when I go to the beach. Isn't that where they are?
Where is their habitat? I don't know. I've never even seen one at an aquarium. Sorry.
I just came for Dan so hard being, they're only in the Arctic, Greenland, Canada, and Russia. So I guess.
I mean, I didn't get a very simple joke, so you can come for me.
That'll be one of my 5 beach trips, is to the Arctic so I can see a narwhal. Okay, maybe I would make an exception to see a narwhal. Okay.
There. I'm looking it up, so I was like, where can I go see a narwhal? Apparently, there are none in captivity, which is, that's great. Damn, they do not thrive in captivity. So it's, how no metal do. Are these animals that they can't even be, they can't even live in captivity?
Exactly. Anyway, okay, so we get back to Avatar. They show up on time. In fact, too early. Azula takes the fact that they say they're partying from dusk till dawn a little bit too literally. They show up exactly at dusk. And even though Chan says, like, oh no, this is just an expression, Azula's like, no, we're the perfect party guests. We're right on time because we're very punctual. You know, I love it. I love someone who's on time. We get Chan, you know, trying to give some house rules, saying like, hey, don't mess anything up. My dad's an admiral. And then Azula tries to give Chan a compliment here. The compliment does not go over very well. This is when she says that he's so sharp that he could puncture the hull of an Empire-class Fire Nation battleship. Yeah, a little awkward. Not
a little.
Best. Not the best.
Do you guys arrive on time to parties?
I try to. I like being on time to things, but as I've gotten older, I've gotten worse at like being on time to things.
I was never good at being punctual. I'm always late to stuff. I'm good at being punctual for podcasts, but for parties, I'm always running late, I feel like, sadly.
Yeah.
As far as parties go, I was on time once, and it was very awkward, and I decided to never do that again.
Yes. Same.
Oh, I was going to say fashionably late is a phrase. Fashionably early is rude. Like, there's no such thing as fashionably early. Probably
people showed up at my wedding fashionably early, and it was the most stressful part of my wedding. Just like, wait, what are these people doing here? Yeah, like a full hour before the wedding started. I was like, what are all these people doing here? We have nothing for you. Go home. Standing around. I don't know. I was taking photos.
You should have had some, like, what's it called? Cornhole for them to play?
No, what? It's not on me. For the activities are not set up. They arrived at 4. The wedding was called for 5.
Yeah, that's rude. Like, they're being so polite, it's rude.
Okay, so polite. Wedding. And they weren't even family. It was so weird.
Yeah, no, it's weird.
My wedding will have cornhole for any guest that is up early. Just throwing that out there.
I'll show up to your wedding early just on purpose, just so you'll see how stressful it is.
Perfect. Yeah. All right. Sorry, Dan. What have you been trying to say as we talk about cornhole and weddings?
No, you're good. Weddings are very important. I was thinking, like, in the beginning of season 3, Hakoda and Bato and all of them, mm-hmm. they were saying we were sent by Admiral Chan. And then the other guy who reported to, like, the captain on the other boat said, Admiral Chan is on vacation in Ember Island right now. Do you think Admiral Chan just left, and now Chan Jr. is like, dad's gone, time to throw a rager?
Yeah, probably. I think so. I think that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. That fantastic call. That is 100% correct.
I mean, I don't know if Chan is like Lee, and that, like, there are so many people with that name in this world. Like, there's got to be a lot of admirals. There's maybe a lot of Chans.
Specifically, he's vacationing on Ember Island. Like, that's obviously, it has to be the same person. They wouldn't put this is a TV show. They wouldn't put it in unless it was true.
Yeah, it's more fun for the headcanon anyway, if this is the case. So this is what I'm going to believe no matter what. I definitely like that. Anyway, so they're at the party. We see, like, some guy... I actually don't remember if this is the guy we met earlier, but some guy walks up to May and is like, oh, you're here first. And Zuko's like pretty snappy at him. I didn't think that this was a great look from him. Then he's like being a little rude to May about it. I don't know. Like, this, they get a lot worse here. I was not appreciating this that much.
Zuko is so unreasonable here. He's like, he thinks he's so great. What do you think of him, May? And then May gives, like, the correct response. She's like, I hardly know him. I have no opinion of him. And then Zuko goes from, like, 0 to 100 real quick. And he's like, you like him, don't you? We're like, what the hell, Zuko? Like, what's wrong with you?
This jealous boyfriend look is not good.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. It's very bad. I think, like, Zuko, like, we see at the beach, like, a little bit with Azula too. Like Zuko takes off his shirt. Everyone's like, ooh, ah, Zuko, so pretty. But like, he's still like the same guy on the inside who like doesn't know how to interact with people. May is his first girlfriend. Like, he's super insecure and it's not fun for anyone.
That's very true. And he's like really jumping to conclusions here. It's like pretty gross behavior from him. Then we see like another group of gross behavior with these teens that are obsessed with Ty Lee. They're all like, I did this for her. Well, I met her first. I did this. Ty Lee is like really not feeling it. They literally corner her in the room. They're like, which one of us do you like? Very dumb. Ty Lee does the only appropriate thing and knocks all five of them out immediately. Just lays them all out. And then walks up to Azula to see them. I really appreciate that she's like knocks people out at the party. Quite a cool move from her.
Girls don't owe you affection just because you do nice things for them. Like, that's just not how life works. Like, it's just you have to be genuine person. You can't buy their affection with like. I won't use the word that Jacob said I'm not allowed to use, but with nice deeds.
Yes. You can't be nice, just to get like the attention. But then you also shouldn't be rude to your friend. So Ty Lee is saying like, mm-hmm. Oh, these people won't leave me alone. And Azula's like, you're so ignorant. These boys only like you because you make it easy for them. You're not a challenge. You're a tease. And like Azula, is like so brutal here. Ty Lee immediately starts crying on hearing this. We do see Azula step back a little bit. She says she didn't mean what she said. I think this is the only time I've ever seen remorse from Azula ever, and we'll ever see it in the whole series. But she like really crosses the line here. I know Azula's brutal, but this is not what we want to see at our roasts. Like, we need a soft edge for sure.
Yeah,
but she very clearly doesn't apologize. She just like says, I didn't mean it. She's like, mm-hmm. kind of like, say I'm sorry though. She's not there yet.
Mm-hmm. It's obviously just coming from a place of jealousy though. She's just envious of Ty Lee and her ability to pick up boys.
Yeah, she even says she's jealous, and Ty Lee's like, but you're the most beautiful, smartest, perfect girl in the world. And Azula's like, well, you're right about those. And I love that. I love that energy. Then Ty Lee gives her some flirting advice. And I'm going to go ahead and say I don't stand by this at all. But Ty Lee says the way to get a boy is to look at him and smile a lot at everything he says, even if it's not funny.
Sarah, is this how you picked up your husband?
Yeah, I will announce that this has a 100% success rate. If you are looking to get a guy's attention, this is all you need to do. This is correct. This is it. You just smile at him, like make eye contact. Wow, the girl's making eye contact with me. She's laughing at my dumb dad jokes. Oh my God, I know this isn't funny. And then their guard comes down, and then they're in love with you. And it, 100% success rate for me. Ask Woody and Jacob. 100%.
I am floored. I am absolutely floored that this is the advice that we're going with. I thought for sure that everyone would be like, no, this is dumb. This doesn't work. Like,
For me, 100%. I don't know if girls or if anyone has tried this on you and you could see through it. I have never had any guy catch me out in this.
No, I'm super susceptible to that. Like, it's definitely a thing. Like, looking back, like, oh, that's why that person was laughing at that thing I said that was not funny at all. Like, it's an ego boost. It's a nice little move.
But does it count if it's like Azula's laugh? Because like Ty Lee like does this practice on her, and Azula laughs so loud the entire party comes to a screeching halt. Like,
yeah, then she learned how to laugh correctly and got the kiss later. Okay. It totally worked.
Yeah,
it's just funny that she didn't know. Continue, Dan.
There you go.
Think it's funny how she didn't know how to laugh correctly, and then it's like, how do you not know how to laugh? That's wild.
Yeah, that's actually really tragic if you think about it. Like, she doesn't even know how to laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see later, Azula, like in her one moment of introspection, she has like a little like tragic backstory as well, even if she doesn't want to get into it. But like Azula, she knows the plan again, like in volleyball. She just doesn't have the follow through. Okay, look, smile, laugh. And she just can't do it correctly.
Dan, you're just so smart. This
breakdown, Dan. Yeah, you're on top of it. She knows the exact plan, but can't do the execution. That's very correct. Anyway, so after we see the entire party come to a screeching halt, we see Mei and Zuko sitting in the corner to themselves, doing their own thing. They're like, Mei's like, I'm bored. I'm hungry. And Mei's like, go get me some food. And Zuko's like, fine. This is like, they're not happy with each other. I don't know what's going on here. But yeah, he's going to go get some food. While he's doing that, Azula's like, okay, I'm ready for the tour of the house. Chan is like so enamored and ready to go that he ditches the girl that he's talking to go show Azula around. Azula places the cup on this girl's head that she was talking to. And apparently the girl was so angry that it causes steam to come from the head, which I thought was a great joke from the animators. I really appreciated that.
Pretty sure that was iced tea. If Jet saw that, he would have been pissed. That girl heating up her tea?
Yeah. You know, someone heating up their tea, clearly Fire Nation. Obviously, they're in the actual Fire Nation, but this is the dead giveaway. Yeah. Another
Jet
great
would have
call.
Such a bad time. Jet would have such a bad time in the Fire Nation.
Yes.
Yeah, he would whisper to someone. He'd be like, I think they're Fire Nation. And he's like, yeah, I think so too. And he'd be like, I'm very upset about this. Yeah, no, I don't think he'd do well in the Fire Nation. No.
No.
Anyway, we see Chan and Azula talking. Chan's saying like, oh, is this like your first time here? And then he says, it's a great place if you like sand, where we see Azula give a pretty convincing laugh. And then Chan, yeah, I guess you're right, Sarah, because this works on him in completely, where he gives
Instantaneously it works.
Because then he gives like a worse joke where he's like, welcome to Sandyland. And then they both laugh. And then he goes from being far away to like being a lot closer to her. Yeah, Azula then compliments him. He then flexes his muscles and they kiss. Apparently that's the move.
It's Azula's first kiss. It's a big moment.
Yeah.
We assume. I don't know.
Yeah.
I doubt it.
Tylee's flirting advice is so good that she helped Azula recover from that awful like battleship pickup line that Tylee got her from the beginning of the party being super punctual, no social skills, to her first kiss.
Also, this guy saw her literally go psychopath on like another group of teens playing volleyball and still thought, yeah, I'll kiss her. Why not?
I mean,
this is Chan we're talking about.
Yeah. The Chan, though. Do you know who is that?
Do
you know who my father is? Wait till he hears about this.
Yeah.
Does he even know her name? Do they give names? No. No, they don't know anything. Guys are the worst. Ugh.
There are only two names that matter. And the two names that matter are the names Zach said earlier so perfectly.
Chan and whatever the other guy's name was.
Oh. I was like, I was waiting for the joke, and I was like, I have no idea where we're going with this, Dan. But I was ready for another thing. Then, after the kiss, we get one of my favorite moments in this episode. Zach, did you appreciate this moment from Azula here?
Of course. She's like, together, you and I will be the strongest couple in the world. We will dominate the earth, as she firebends some blue flame. This is amazing.
I watched it with captions, and it literally said sweetly for together, you and I, and then it switched to firmly for when she was like, dominate the entire earth. I was like, wow.
Yeah. And then I really like she has like the blue fire, and she like looks completely deranged, and Chan goes from like, you know, being all sweet and trying to be smooth himself to like going completely like blank face, like completely slack face, very serious. I really appreciated that. We even see like his eyes shrink and sweat like drip from his forehead before he's like, all right, time to go, which I thought was quite funny. So then we see him go away. Azula's standing there upset. We go back to Zuko. Zuko's walking around with some food he's got. Someone bumps into him. The food hits the ground. And instead of Zuko maintaining his composure, he says, hey, watch it. That food was for my cranky girlfriend. the use of the word cranky here is odd. I feel like that one could have been left out. But then he even points at her saying, like, this is the cranky girlfriend of which I speak, which I thought was funny. And then he sees that someone was chatting up his girl, which makes him even more upset. Zuko then walks up, pushes the guy away. And then the guy's like, hey, what are you doing? Zuko, like, gets upset with him. They have a whole fight. Zuko literally throws him a full, like, I guess not a fully grown man, but like a 17-year-old boy. He picks him up, throws him across the room, breaking a vase, as everyone like freaks out a little bit on him. Scale of 1 to 10. How toxic is Zuko in this? Is he breaking the scale?
11. Yeah. He's breaking the scale for sure. He's just toxic this whole episode, but I get like, they'll talk about the end of the episode, the final scene, which is pretty powerful. It's like, he's got a lot of inner turmoil at this moment in time.
Yeah. So I think that this episode is his breaking point. Like, this is the worst we see Zuko be. And it's honestly really sad. Like knowing what we know will come later, but like, it's just like, oh, poor baby, he's hurting so bad, but like, why are you destroying this kid's life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's like breaking the toxicity scale as much as he's breaking like the vase. He's very like insistent, my girlfriend May, stop talking to my cranky girlfriend, my girlfriend. He's super insecure, and we know like he's going through like a lot, but it like spills over through like his relationship, his friendships, just like everything.
Yeah. Yeah, this really is a low moment for him. And I think we'll see next week that he had to hit this low moment in order for next week to hit as well as it does. Like next week, we get a lot of cool stuff in the episode, like with Zuko's backstory, his destiny, all of that sort of stuff. So it is cool to see him hit his low moment. But apparently this is too much for May. May breaks up with him, says like, we're done here. Then like it just really gets bad quick because Chan walks in. He's like, hey, like who broke the space? Like, you got to get out of here. They all decide to leave. We then see Zuko. He's walking around. They go up to this vacation house, which is like a pretty good house. Like, this is one I would even consider staying in. We see like a bunch of times where he's flashing back to memories he's had. He's flashing back to hanging out with his dad at the beach. We see him flash back to hang out with his mom. We also see him hanging out with Iroh and Lu Ten as they make a sandcastle. Lots of cool memories here from Zuko as he walks up to the house. We then go see Zuko go to the door. The door is locked, so he uses his leg muscles to just keep the whole door down. Pretty impressive here. Anyway, he walks in. He sees a family portrait, and he has some more flashbacks here. Any thoughts on this scene from Zuko as he's flashing back to his happier childhood, seeing his mom, seeing his dad, seeing everything in a good place?
It plays well with like what he's going to reveal later, that like that was like everything he wanted and what he wanted to get back to. And it's like, he feels like he should be back to it now, like with his family and approval. And he's just not there, and that's why he's so like eaten up inside.
I think that's really accurate. Zach, what were you gonna say?
Once again, I forget, so sorry about that.
No worries. I think like the important thing here is like we see him reliving his past. He's obviously in a weird transitional moment where he doesn't really know like what he should be doing. He has what he wanted, but he's not really like happy and satisfied with it. So I think this is like a cool moment. The next thing we get is, pretty cool too. We see Team Avatar. They're all sleeping. Toph wakes up after seeing or feeling a foot, in the distance. She's like, oh, a metal man coming, which is good that we have this canary from Toph, because, we're going to see this assassin, Sparky Sparky Boom Boom Man. Take a deep breath. He's going to shoot a laser or an explosion out of his head. His tattoo then like causes a giant shockwave. But thankfully they're able to get out of the way. Aang's able to like, you know, zoom out and use some air bending to get out of the way. Or maybe this is when he earth bends. They do like lots of these shots where he like shoots the explosion and then gets away.
He takes three shots, but then first, oh my gosh, I'm not on the right place in my notes. I'm sorry. Yeah, his first one's not even close. His second one is a little close, but Aang is able to block it with airbending, and then Katara mm-hmm. blocks the third with a wave of water. And then we cut back to Azula and them.
Yeah, the thing I was most impressed by here is how quick they go from sleeping to like peak fighting form. You know, when I wake up, I need like half an hour to do anything productive. But they wake up and 5 seconds later, they're like stopping explosions from going by their face. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, facts. I mean, I guess they're used to it from when they were chased by Azula in the chase. Yeah. So they're used to like waking up and being ready to fight.
Very also, true. I think you get that like nice adrenaline shot when your life's in danger and you wake up. Like, you know, when you wake up, like if you have like a bad dream or like you dream that you're falling, you wake up like with like a shock. It's probably similar.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I guess when I wake up, it's a lot lower stakes than
I mean, they were super off guard when they were swimming just in the middle of nowhere. So now they saved up all of their high alertness for when they're asleep.
Yeah, you know, I guess that works. Probably not the best use of their strategy. They should have just had their high guard earlier and then avoided this. But hey, you know, can't win them all. Anyway, we'll go back to this fight in a second. But before we do that, we see Azula go up to Zuko. She finds him at the old house. And yeah, Zuko's like really reflecting on things changing. Azula like encourages him to go to the beach because it's too depressing. And we see all of them being Mei, Zuko, Ty Lee, and Azula sitting by the beach. Zuko is still being immature here. He's like, oh, where's your new boyfriend? Before he like, you know, decides that he can be mature. Then he asks if people are cold. Ty Lee says she's freezing. So Zuko's like, oh, I can make a fire. There's plenty of stuff in the house to burn. He's a firebender. He doesn't need stuff, right? Like,
thank you. I had that in my notes, too. This is a very frustrating point of the episode.
But on the beach, what would he burn on the beach? Would the burn sand? What? Like, what? Like
he's a firebender. What do you mean? He creates
fire. You just want him to, like, make like a continuous stream of fire. Like he has to stand yes. there firebending the whole time, being like a heater for Ty Lee. Okay. And like he can't just like sit back and relax. Also, yes. There's all this stuff in this house. They should have been staying in this house that's much nicer, the Lohan Lee's cottage. But like if they're not going to use it, they might as well burn the stuff.
Wait.
Why
no.
haven't they sold this house is my question. Like this is some serious real estate. Like they're not going back here.
That is true. Dan, I don't think it's a use it or burn it mentality. That's wild. Like on a beach, there's got to be driftwood. Like why is your option like either stay in the house or burn the house to the ground? Like there's a middle ground that we're not hitting yet.
Yeah, and I don't think they should be burning anything in the house. Like these like timeless like family artifacts and heirlooms. I don't think they should be burning that stuff.
Dan's like,
that was
burn
like
it down.
Exaggeration. My point was more, why aren't they staying in the house? They I should agree, be yeah. staying in the house. It's much correct. Nicer than the cottage. I guess it goes back to like Lohan Lee are making them stay with them. But like to Zuko's point, he's not burning it because he can't find anything to burn. He's burning it because he doesn't want to remember all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway.
burn the house down. They're not living there. Burn it down.
We go back to Team Avatar. They're trying to get away from Combustion Man. They're like trying to get away. Sokka's like saying like, oh, this is crazy. Like, how are we going to beat up a guy who can blow stuff up with his mind? And then Aang, classic airbender, says like, let's just try to distract him and get away. He then decides to like start running away. They create some smoke to make some distance for them. He then like starts using some like cliffs, using the terrain to his advantage. I thought this was pretty impressive. He uses a lot of rock pillars to get away. Then we see, Aang's like trying to get away. We then have some more explosions. We get one really cool shot where we see like the little dot going, and then Aang like airbends it away. So it was cool to be able to see that it's like actually like an actual object flying through the sky. Then
yeah, it was in like slow motion too. That mm-hmm. was a really impressive shot. I have that in my notes.
Yeah.
Is this is this the first episode where we see Combustion Man bending? Or yes. did we see him bend before?
Yes, this is like, the first episode where we actually see him like shoot stuff from his third eye.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's really cool. Probably worth mentioning. Like, we've never seen bending like that before.
But yeah, that's fair. Yeah, this guy's got a pretty cool backstory. I was reading a little bit about this. This is like what I was going to mention earlier about the HBO version, is that in the HBO version, I think that they would have left something in one of the original scripts. In the original script, they had him disposing of the two soldiers that we saw earlier, like getting rid of them and killing them. I think we probably see that in the HBO version. We see him just like take out the soldiers, take the messenger hawk, clean up any evidence of this. But obviously, we don't see that in the kids show. anyway, yeah, very cool. He has this like power to be able to channel firebending through his like eye. He's able to like project it to cause these explosions. So it's like a unique form of bending. Then we see, yeah, like Aang realizes he's not really going to be able to get away. So instead, Aang hides in the rocks, kind of like Toph did in season 2, encasing herself in rocks. Aang does the same thing. The assassin is able to like see or I guess notice that he's there. Aang then jumps up. Combustion Man shoots like some explosion at him, which only propels Aang forward since he's in some rocks, and he's able to get away. Unique use of earthbending here from Aang. A really airbending move using earthbending as the medium. I thought that was pretty cool. And then, yeah, Katara leaves this off by saying, like, no, I have a feeling he knows who we are. And it's like, yeah, no, duh. Like, obviously, he's not going to attack some random children. Yeah, they know you're the Avatar. I mean,
if he was going to kill some, like, teenage firebending guards, you'd think he's not just going to kill some kids?
Maybe. No. I don't know. That's dark. That's dark even for,
I guess,
even for
I, this I, show. I've been really dark on this podcast. I'm sorry. Like, was I inspiring burnings? Like, this. I'm sorry. I'm bringing a bad energy here.
No, I like it. I'm here for
yeah.
it.
Yeah, it's fine. It's just like, yeah, you know, it's a children's show. They deal with some dark things, but I don't think they kill random children.
Well, anyway. They did originally include that. So it was, yeah. It was on their minds. It would yeah. create some serious stakes. And I think that, like, we'd see later in Korra that they kind of, like, up the ante on mm-hmm. on the, a lot of, like, death is possible. And
yeah.
damn, is that intense.
Yeah, yeah. Korra does have some really dark moments, for sure. But anyway, we get back to the beach here. We see them, like, start to burn stuff down. And this is where we get really into the emotion of it all. They all kind of... each have their emotional moments. Zuko first starts by insulting Ty Lee, making fun of her. He even calls her a circus freak, which is something we heard Katara call her earlier in season 2. And Ty Lee really like takes this on and gives it a new meaning. I thought this was a really sweet moment here. She like reclaims circus freak and says like, this is good because she had 6 sisters growing up who looked like her. She felt like she was part of a match set, but now Circus Freak is a compliment because she's different. I thought this is a nice way to like turn the insult, make it something better, own it. I appreciated that. I thought this was good.
It is, right? But I don't want to blow up Tylee's spot. And also I don't want to blow up my spot as someone who like is too obsessed with Avatar. But like in like one of the comics from like after the series, we see like Ty Lee's sisters, and they're also all into circus acrobatics. So to make herself different, I guess they all chose the same thing to make themselves different because they all just do the same stuff still.
Not canon.
No, but I think I believe yes. So they all do the same sort of thing, but they're all doing it like in different groups rather than being together. Like I feel like it still counts.
Yeah, they're all going like 6 different circuses, so it makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah. I was in my head catted.
Yep. Yeah. So Ty Lee gets her moment. The next one is Ty Lee turns it on May, where she's like, oh, you're an only child for 15 years, but your aura is dingy, pasty, and gray. Zuko gets more offended than anything else on her behalf. Zuko's like, are you going to take that? And Nei has a great moment here where she's like, what do you want from me? You want a teary confessional about how hard my childhood was? Well, it wasn't. She explains that she was rich. She realized if she stayed out of trouble and was quiet, she'd get everything she wanted. I think Nei like learned how to hack her life. You know, she doesn't seem too happy about it, but, you know, she seems, she's at least surviving. Then like
she was May, like literally conditioned not to share her feelings and mm-hmm. now doesn't know how to properly express herself.
Yeah, that's yes. how Azula basically describes it. She's yeah. like, well, you had a controlling mother who had high expectations, and that's why you're afraid to care about anything, and that's why you don't express yourself. So good analysis, Sarah.
Yeah, and then May, like, says, like, she stands up to Azula, which we'll see May's, like, pretty much the only person who can stand up to Azula. Mm-hmm. And she screams at her, like, leave me alone. Zuko's like, ooh, she's showing, like, her expressive side. So he tries to make a move. And it's like, why did you think this was the time to make your move, dude? Like, read the room. Like, come on now. Leave her alone. May's like, don't touch me. I'm so mad at you. And it's like, oh, my God. And then we get Zuko's moment. Ty Lee says one of the funniest things. She's like, too much negative energy is bad for your skin. Yeah, you'll totally break out. And Zuko's like, are you serious right now? Like, we're talking about clear skin and acne. Like, have you seen my face? He doesn't say it into so many words, but he has his moment where he's like, even though I'm lauded as a hero, like I have everything I want, I'm not happy. And then everyone sort of like pesters him a bit. They keep saying like, oh, who are you mad at? Like, are you mad at dad? Like, are you mad at your uncle? Where he ends up like really blowing up. He says, I'm angry at myself. He creates a gigantic fire that must have made Ty Lee just a little bit warmer as he gets upset there. This was a good moment from Zuko. I appreciated this realization that he has. And I really think this helps motivate his character going into next week.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, this is really good character progression, I feel like.
Yep. Go on, Dan.
Zuko's moment of insight, like, they really had to push him. Everyone else, like, or Ty Lee and May, and we're going to see Azula, they already know, like, who they are and what makes them, like, upset and why they are the way they are. Zuko like really needs prodding, and also like classic angsty Zuko. Like Ty Lee only goes into her thing because Zuko attacked her. May only goes into her thing because Ty Lee attacked her. Zuko says, "Well, you know why I'm so upset and why my life is so bad? I don't really know, but you should listen to my angst."
Real main character energy there.
Yeah, that feels very on brand for him to be like, "Oh, it's my turn to speak now. Like I'm the one who now gets to talk." And then Azula's so funny. Her response was like, well, those were wonderful performances, everyone. And it's like, damn, these people just like, these supposed friends of yours. Just had like a very emotional moment and you're just going to stand there and stunt on them. And then Azula like goes through, she's like, you know, like I could be upset that our mom likes Zuko more than me, but I don't care. Like she like completely owns all of this, that she thought that she was a monster, or her mom thought she was a monster. I thought this was funny. And then Azula decides to cap it off with the only, thing that she knows how to do, which is, pure destruction.
My favorite line is she goes, my own mother thought I was a monster. She was right, of course, but it still hurt.
Yeah. I love that.
The delivery on that line is just like, that's so perfect.
And I kind of flippant.
I read that as like for a moment Azula was able to like let herself feel something, like, but and then going right back to no, emotions are only like a performance. Mm-hmm. She's not in touch with herself, like even less so than Zuko. Like Zuko wants to be, and Azula just sees like emotion introspection as a weakness, like outside that like other people have and she can manipulate.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that is accurate. She definitely uses that to her advantage. But then they really cap it off with a great thing. They go into Admiral Chan's house. They completely destroy the place. Zuko kicks a table in half. May takes her knives and slices some paintings. Ty Lee decides to like break some chandeliers. They all do their best to absolutely destroy this house, and we get a great picture of the four of them all hanging out with a fire in the background.
It's a beautiful like painting, yeah.
This was one of my favorite endings to an episode. I really appreciated that, but there you go. That's the beach. That's the episode we're here to talk about. There's a lot of fun things in this episode.
It's a great episode. It's one of my favorites. It's kind of like fillery. If you think about, like, there's not so much like action adventure going on. Yeah. It's slice of life, but I think like it really is a catalyst for like Zuko and his mm-hmm. story and where his story progresses. And it gets me so hyped for the rest of season 3. Like, I think this is the starting point for me, where here and then the next episode is Avatar and the Fire Lord, which is also a fantastic episode. You're just like, we're in it. This is like building and building and building.
Yeah, I agree there.
I think we also do get a little good stuff with like Azula and May and Ty Lee too, though, right? Like, this is the first time we ever see any introspection from Azula, and we see like really how close. It's like Azula and Ty Lee are way closer than Maya is, and that comes into play later with like the Boiling Rock.
Yes.
And just like that is true.
Yeah. Zach, what were your thoughts on the episode overall?
Yeah, I love this episode. I love the beautiful nature of like everyone, the outpouring of emotion at the end from everyone. Though I think it's pretty telling how like Azula is the only one who really doesn't have that like true moment of growth. Like Dan alluded mm-hmm. how she was close to it, but she didn't have that moment of growth. Whereas May, Ty Lee, and Zuko all pour their hearts out and grow a little bit. And I love this episode. I think it's just the slice of life's nature of it. It's so different from any episode we've watched up to this point. And I really love the uniqueness of it. So yeah, great episode. I'm going to give it a very high score in our ratings when we...
Yeah, well, let's get into that. We'll get into our episode rankings. As a reminder, every week we rank the episodes between 0 and 4 cabbages. We take my score, Zach's score, the guest score, the listener score. We average them all up to get the official Aang in their score. So let's start ranking the episode here. Zach, you want to start us off?
Yeah, I'm going to give this episode a 3.8 out of 4. I know I'm usually pretty high on these episodes. I give them high scores all the time. But yeah, 3.8 is where I'm landed on here.
Okay, yeah, a respectable score there. Sarah, you want to go next?
Yeah, my score is actually also 3.8. Okay. It's one of my top 2 episodes in the entire series. The only knock that I give it is that I really think it would be better if we didn't have like all of the Gang the Combustion Man interstitials. Like, it kind of breaks the pacing for me, and I see like why they did it, obviously, because like that's the show is about the gang. But I think like had that not been there, this would have been 4 out of 4 for me.
I actually really agree with that. Like, they could have done something like Zuko Alone, where they just like, they're like, great, we'll pick up with Avatar next week.
Yeah,
like, this is a Zuko episode. I agree. Dan, where are you on the episode?
I really like the ending of the episode, like after like Zuko leaves the party, he does that walk, all the flashbacks, the beach, whatever. But like the buildup is kind of slow. I'm more of like a 3.4 on this one.
Wow, okay. That's low.
See, yeah, I know. Like, I know a lot of people really love this episode. It's some people's favorite, like Sarah, like you just said. But it's, to me, like it's kind of too like high school movie for me.
Oh, that's why I love it.
Yeah. All right. The listeners are a bit higher than you, Dan, at a 3.62. I thought I was going to be the lowest one. I'm at a 3.6. So I really thought that I was going to be, you know, bringing up the caboose. But Dan is just a little bit behind us. But overall, a very strong episode at a 3.64. An A episode of Avatar. I think I agree. Dan, like I agree with some of what you said, but ultimately it's just like, it's just such a great episode. I love the slice of life. Let's get into our battle of the battle rankings. Lots of, funny things we could be doing here, but we'll just stick to the real battle here between Combustion Man and Team Avatar. I'll start us off. I didn't really like this. I do think it like distracted from the episode. It was cool to see the combustion fighting, but I think we get so many better examples of this, like when mm-hmm. they're at the Air Temple later in the season. When else? Like even like in season 3, I believe episode 7 is when they get that fight in the Runaway. Like I think there's a lot better fights. I'm at like a 2.2 on this fight. Zach, where are you?
I'm a little higher. I'm at like a 2.8. I like when he earthbends himself out of one of the pillars and jumps out at Combustion Man and then like shoots out into the air like Astro Boy. So I enjoyed that aspect of it. So yeah, I'll give it a 2.8 out of 4. It's like I'm low on it, like for the reasons you guys are pointing out, how it's distracting from the A side story. If it wasn't, then I would probably give it even higher. I'd give it like a 3 or something.
Yeah,
but yeah, 2.8. Makes sense.
Dan, where are you on the battle of the battle?
I'm a little higher on this part. I'd give it a 3. Like there's a lot of like creative like bending going on, and I feel like similarly to the episode, I should have liked it more than I did. The reason I'm at 3 is because like this is the first time we see Combustion Man combustion bending, and I think that's really cool. Like I remember watching it for the first time and being blown away. Just something I hadn't even considered before.
Yeah, that is probably true. That I'm like lower on a rewatch than I would have been otherwise. Because like it is really unique fighting, but I think it's not even the best that we get from him. But yeah,
definitely.
Sarah, finish us off on the rankings.
I think I'm kind of like an average of all of that. I put it at a 2.5. And I would give it for Katara's like giant wave where it meets the combustion, and like that picture is just so incredible, and like that moment of the fight was really cool. But I think overall the fight didn't really do anything like extra for me. It was definitely cool to see combustion bending, and I think besides lightning bending and Toph's metal bending, it's one of like the only different types of bending types that we've seen so far. And I think the show explores that a lot later on. And it's cool to see them kind of playing with, we have these four elements of bending, but like we can go even deeper into it and what that means.
Yeah. They definitely have a lot of fun in season 3, breaking out the different types of bending, especially like season 3, episode 8. Quite excited to talk about that one. But that will leave this battle at a 2.63. Yeah, that seems fair for a battle that like isn't even the focus of the episode. Cool. I believe the last thing we have is our tea quartet, where we will talk about the four of us on this podcast. And we're going to do the four of our personalities that we had today in the past 1 hour, 46 minutes and 18 seconds. Okay. So we were all participating. We were all here. Does anyone have, one that we think is clear?
I think Dan's a firebender.
Yeah.
Dan's a firebender.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, everyone else.
I'm sorry,
it's okay. It's not your fault. I mean, it's a fun way to end the show. I find it tough to slot everyone else though. What do you guys think?
I think that Jacob is our earthbender. He was very like steady throughout the podcast, like sometimes leading us off tangents, but always bringing us back and recapping the episode really well. I think he's definitely the earthbender. I think Zach, you and I can flip either way, really.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. You know, Earthbender, I think, is the one I'm the least in, like, my day-to-day life. So I'm glad I could break out of the box a little bit and take the Earthbender on. I'm trying to think. Between the air and the water, it's always hard, I feel like. Either the Airbender is always, like, the most obvious, or it's very difficult to slot.
Yeah.
Dan, are you leaning one way or the other between air and water for Zach and Sarah?
Jacob, well, I'm a little thrown right now because Jacob being the earthbender threw me. I was going to say you were the waterbender because water is like shifting from like the defense to the offense. And I thought you were great with transitions.
But I felt like he was on my defense a lot.
Okay.
I can see that narwhals.
I am stubborn about narwhals. I will stick to that.
Okay, but if I'm going to get on the same page with everyone else, and Jacob is the earthbender, I wonder if Sarah would be the airbender. I know, like, a lot of, like, the airbender is, like, the fun-loving, like, one, but I also think, like, airbending, like we see with other airbenders in Korra, they come at things from, like, a different angle, like, both, like, philosophically and also with, like, a little trickety trick. As Top would say, and I think that was Sarah today. And I think Zach was the waterbender, like ebbing and flowing a little bit, finding the right time to speak and not speak and make the move.
I think Sarah, with her intrinsic motivation, is what makes that the Airbender for me. You know, she's telling us all that we need to be intrinsically motivated. That's a message I'll take for the rest of the day. I agree. Yeah, just the day. Tomorrow I'll forget it. But anyway, all right, there you go. The four of us on the podcast. This might have been the silliest one that we've done. Probably
I thought
we were
gonna do Golden Girls. I've been asking for Golden Girls for years now.
At most it's a year, but we can do Golden Girls. I just don't know them very well. Can you do it for us quickly?
Yeah, I can do it quick. I think the Golden Girls are pretty obvious. I think for anyone who's watched the Golden Girls, I think that Blanche is the obvious firebender.
Blanche is
very, very passionate, very fiery. I think that Rose, who's Betty White's character, she's like literally called an airhead, like throughout the entire series. She's like the obvious, airbender there. And then I think like Dorothy and Sophia, the mother-daughter duo. I think that Sophia's probably like a little more stubborn than they're both very stubborn, but I think Sophia, just like for being old, like a little older, is more stubborn. And then I think Dorothy as the waterbender really makes a lot of sense. She changes and grows a lot throughout the series also. They seem very obvious, so I'm glad that I was able to just knock it out quickly. But I like the silliness of like the four of us, the four different bending types, and we had like kind of two groups of four in the A and the B plot also. Like four people on this podcast felt very natural and right also.
Wow, the listeners are so lucky. They get two T quartets for the price of one, thanks to Sarah.
Yep, I know, a nice double feature for them. But anyway.
And feel free to at me if you can find me if you have a difference of opinion.
Yep, perfect. Because I did watch some episodes when you first suggested that, but I just did not know the show well enough. And I didn't want to like look at someone else's opinion. So anyway, that is all we have for you this week. Next week, I believe we will have a pretty special guest on. I'm quite excited. I guess I shouldn't tease it in case it doesn't happen, but stay tuned. I'm really looking forward to it if it works out next week. So. Very exciting stuff there for an amazing episode of Avatar. But that's all we have for you this week. Dan, where can people keep up with the stuff that you're doing?
I am at No Dice Dan on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. So if you want to see what I have to say or post, that's where you can find me.
Sweet. Lots of games, like from the RHAP that you've made, lots of runs of interesting shapes, and words and such. So yeah, definitely a fun follow. Sarah, where can people keep up with you?
Don't follow me on anything. Don't try to find me. Okay. I'm not, don't do it. You could catch me in the Patreon Facebook group for Rob Has a Podcast and the Patreon Discord for post show recap. But don't follow me anywhere. It's embarrassing the amount of reality TV I consume and talk about there. Thank you.
should we just bleep every time we say your name so no one knows who it was?
I changed my Twitter handle anyway, so people shouldn't be able to find me from there. We're all good.
I was going to say, when Zach introduces you, it can be like, and we have beep on. All right. Okay. So do not try to follow her, but you should try to follow Zach, at Zach Muhammad 32. And you should follow me, at JK Redman. Zach, anything else to plug?
No, I have nothing to plug. No podcasts or anything coming up.
All right. Well, thank you so much for going on this great, beach vacation with us. One of the five times I'll go to the beach, and I only have four left. But until next time, we'll see you later. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You've worked hard for what you have, your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.